Biological hazards are microorganisms, including recombinant DNA, which are commonly accepted as posing a hazard to human health or the environment, including pathogenic bacteria, fungi, parasites, protozoans, viruses, oncogenic cancer-causing viruses, recombinant DNA, and plant and animal toxins. Molecules constructed outside of living cells by joining natural or synthetic DNA segments to DNA molecules that can replicate in a living cell, or molecules that result from their replication. 42 CFR 1003, December 2002, is titled Possession, Use, and Transfer of Selected Agents and Toxins. Requires that registration of facilities that use biological agents or toxins from a select list that have the potential to pose a severe threat to public health and safety. It's governed by various regulations, primarily by the USDA, the FDA, and NIH. This is all about recombinant DNA. The NIH guidelines for research involving recombinant DNA molecules, Federal Register, July 1995. The policy requires the establishment of a 5-person Institutional Biosafety Committee, IBC, for review and approval of research as required. Experimentation falls into one of 4 classes: those which are exempt from the guidelines, those requiring notification of the IBC simultaneously with initiation of the experiment, those requiring prior review and approval by the IBC, and those requiring prior approval and prior review and approval by the NIH Recombinant DNA Advisory Committee, the RAC. Let's see, non-exempt research requires the filing of a registration document which describes the project, that's the source of the DNA, the nature of the inserted DNA sequences, the hosts and vectors to be used, and the expression of the foreign gene. Also makes an assessment of containment levels and provides information on medical surveillance. Radiation safety. Only licensed use of radiation sources, radioisotopes, radio label compounds. It's regulated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Radiation Safety Committee reviews use and protocols, and training is required. OSHA sets lab standards. It affects all facilities using hazardous chemicals, even those using small quantities. The Institutional Chemical Hygiene Plan must minimize employee exposure. They need information and training, a medical exam for persons showing symptoms of chemical exposure. Well, that's a good idea. The IBC have yearly reviews that they submit to NIH, 2 outside people, 1 technician, a scientist, and 2 community members. And now we're going to talk about professional conduct. And there's a book called On Being a Scientist, Responsible Conduct in Research, that just talks about the scientific process and how important it is for scientists to be honest. And part of this is in disclosure policies, like conflict of interest. An individual must disclose a significant financial interest that could pose a conflict of interest situation. The institution has policies also for conflict of interest. Institutional policy ensures against institution making research decisions that are biased because of the financial holdings of the institution. Misconduct in science is fabrication, falsification, or plagiarism, the big FFPs, and that includes obstruction of the investigation. There must be an institutional policy to investigate allegations, to notify the sponsor, to protect whistleblowers, to restore reputations, and inform scientific and administrative staff. As defined in the Public Health Service Act, Section 493, fabrication, falsification, plagiarism, or other practices that seriously deviate from those that are commonly accepted within the scientific community for proposing, conducting, or reporting research. It does not include honest error or honest differences in interpretation or judgments of error. Scientific misconduct is regulated by Public Health Service Act Section 493, which establishes the Office of Research Integrity, ORI, 42 CFR Part 50 Subpart A, which establishes the Office of Scientific Integrity, Office of Scientific Integrity, OC. They go together. ORI, the Office of Research Integrity, is located within the Office of the Secretary of Health and Human Services. It monitors and oversees to ensure that the applicant and awardee institutions are complying with PHS regulations. ORI compliance issues in case of science misconduct, the research integrity official meets the institutional official responsible for assessing allegations of scientific misconduct and determining when such allegations warrant inquiries for overseeing inquiries and investigations. A multi-campus institution or an institution with several large research components may wish to delegate these functions to more than one individual. The deciding official means the institutional official who makes the final determinations in allegations of scientific misconduct. The deciding official will not be the same individual as the research integrity officer and should have no direct prior involvement in the institution's inquiry, investigation, or allegation assessment. The institution is obliged to provide training to students receiving institutional grants at NIH-funded institutions, as well as all individuals supported by PHS funds. OC, the Office of Scientific Integrity, is located within the Office of the Director of the National Institutes of Health. It oversees implementation of PHS policies and procedures, and it conducts and monitors investigations. The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, protects personal health information through Health and Human Services. It was 1996, Public Law 104, gives Health and Human Services the authority to, among other things, specify the types of measures required to protect the security and privacy of personally identifiable healthcare information. The privacy rule was issued by Health and Human Services in August 2002, protecting the privacy of individually identifiable health information by establishing conditions for its use and disclosure. A covered entity is a healthcare provider who transmits protected health information, PHI, electronically for any one of 8 covered transactions, a health plan or healthcare clearinghouse. For inadvertent violations where there is no personal gain, like when you did this by mistake, there's a $100 violation. So releasing 200 subject records by mistake would be $20,000. Criminal penalties for intentionally violating this is $50,000 to $250,000 per offense with a possibility of a prison term. HIPAA does not replace or modify the common rule or FDA regulations. It exceeds privacy provisions in the common rule and FDA regulations. It extends to decedents. It applies to all research, regardless of funding and activity. It extends the definition of identifiable information. Under the HIPAA privacy rule, individuals' written authorization is required for use or disclosure unless waived or accepted. Authorization waivers can be granted by IRBs or privacy boards. For the decedent's information is protected, authorization is not required. Required accounting and reporting of all disclosures. Valid written authorization from the patient, or I guess the subject, required statements, the right to revoke authorization, ability, inability to condition treatment, payment, benefits on authorization, description of the public health information to be used to disclose, persons authorized to release this information, persons authorized to receive this information, the purpose of the use of disclosure, and the expiration date or event, like when the signed statement no longer applies. Privacy rule applies to one type of information. IRBs must carefully screen protocols to ensure that all HIPAA regulations are being followed, even in secondary data collection type projects. Protected health information, PHI, health information plus identifier equals protected health information. It can be transmitted or maintained in any form, electronic, paper, or verbal, and decedent's information is included. It does not include de-identified health information or biological tissue. That's probably enough for that. Notice of privacy protections. NOPP, the NOPE, Notice of Privacy Protections. Covered entity tells the patient how PHI will be used and disclosed. Written acknowledgement of receipt of notice of privacy protection by the patient. Use of PHI beyond what is described in NOPE requires a patient authorization, and there's some exceptions to that. There is required tracking under HIPAA law. The researcher must keep a record of PHI disclosures for 6 years. Modified requirements if the research has under 50 patients, no need for a list of individual patients. For each disclosure, the PI must record a name of individuals receiving the PHI, the dates, the description of the information disclosed, and the purpose of the disclosure. Doing research under HIPAA, research data can be de-identified in one of two ways. The removal of all 18 personal identifiers, verification by a statistician that there is less than a very small risk that an individual's identity can be detected. To qualify as a limited data set, the researcher must limit identifiers to dates, city, state, or zip, non-identifying numbers, characteristics, or codes. The advantage to this is that no authorization is required, no waiver is required, but a PA must agree to a data use agreement. When it talks about the 18 personal identifiers, those are things like name, geographic information, dates, telephone number, fax number, email, social security number, prescription number, healthcare plans, account numbers, certification license numbers, IP addresses, fingerprints, full face or photos, anything that's a unique identifier. Now, disclosure and publication policies. In general, federal sponsors require research results to be published in the open literature, the Stevens Amendment. The Stevens Amendment, Disclosure of Federal Participation, Section 8136 of the Department of Defense Appropriations Act, October 1988, says that when issuing statements, press releases for proposals, bid solicitations, or other documents describing projects or programs funded in whole or in part with federal money, all grantees receiving federal funds, including but not limited to state and local government, shall clearly state the percentage of the total cost of the program or project which will be financed with federal money and the dollar amount of federal funds for the project or program. Sponsorship is to be acknowledged, but there is to be a disclaimer that the contents are the responsibility of the author, not of the sponsor. In cases where commercial sponsors limit or unduly delay publication, the project may cease to meet the IRS definition as scientific research and be subject to unrelated business income tax. Okay, the Stevens Amendment requires acknowledgement of federal sponsorship in publications and the potential consequence of a contract that limits or delays publication is that the item will no longer be treated by the IRS as scientific research and will be subject to the unrelated business income tax, UBIT. Public policy requires that nonprofit entities shall not use their tax-exempt status to compete unfairly with for-profit corporations. Activities which are regularly conducted, which are not substantially related to the tax-exempt mission of a nonprofit, are unrelated business. Unrelated business income tax determination is based on the purposes and activities of the project and not whether any surplus is used to support exempt activities. Publications delayed to acquire patient protection or to coordinate with collaborating colleagues' publication still will meet the scientific research definition to the IRS. Intellectual property. There was no government-wide policy regarding ownership of inventions made by government contractors and grantees under federal funding. Federal agencies kept tight control over intellectual property rights resulting from funded research, premised largely on traditional expectations rooted in the procurement process. In the 1960s and 1970s, there was much debate surrounding federal patent policies. A major concern was the lack of success by the federal government in promoting the adoption of new technologies by industry. The problem was due, in part, to restrictions imposed on the licensing of new technologies and a reluctance on the part of agencies to permit ownership of inventions to vest in universities and other grantees. Inconsistencies in policies and practices among the various funding agencies resulted in a very limited flow of government-funded inventions to the private sector. In 1980, the federal government had titled to approximately 28,000 patents. Fewer than 5% of these were licensed to industry for development of commercial products. Well, who leapt into action in 1980? Bayh-Dole Act, a guide to the law in implementing regulations. Legislators and the administration concluded that the public would benefit from a policy that permitted universities and small businesses to elect ownership of inventions made under federal funding and to become directly involved with the commercialization process. This would permit exclusive licensing when combined with diligent development and transfer of an invention to the marketplace for the public good. The Bayh-Dole Act, PL 96597, 1980, with amendments included in PL 98620, enacted into law in 1984. Regulations implementing federal patent and licensing policy regarding rights to inventions made by nonprofit organizations and small business firms are codified at 37 CFR Part 401. What is a patent? A patent is a form of intellectual property, and it excludes others from making, using, and selling this property for 20 years from the date of issue. Patentable items must be useful, novel, and non-obvious. Intellectual property is a product of the mind that may be tangible or intangible, that can be bought, sold, traded, or licensed. A U.S. patent is an abstract legal right to exclude others from making, using, and selling whatever is covered by the claims of the patent anywhere within the United States, its territories, and its possessions for 20 years from the date of issue of the patent. It used to be 17 years, but they added 3 and now it's 20. Intellectual property patents. The provisions in 37 CFR 401 apply to all inventions conceived or first actually reduced to practice in the performance of a federal grant, contract, or cooperative agreement, even if the federal government is not the sole source of funding for either the conception or the reduction to practice. They did not something to federal grants that are primarily for the oh they do not apply to federal grants that are primarily for the training of students and postdoctoral scientists. The institution is obligated to have written agreements with its researchers and technical staff requiring disclosure and assignment of inventions. The institution has an obligation to disclose each new invention to the federal funding agency within 2 months after the inventor discloses it in writing to the institution. The decision whether or not to retain title to the invention must be made within 2 years after this disclosure to the agency. This time may be shortened if the one-year U.S. statutory patent bar has been set in motion. So, patents on intellectual property, Bayh-Dole influenced all of this, 37 CFR 401, applies to all research grants, contracts, and cooperative agreements. Written agreements with the PI and staff must disclose new invention to agency within 2 months of disclosure. Decision to retain title within 2 years after disclosure. Patent application must be applied for within 1 year of electing title. Upon election of title, the institution must file a patent application within 1 year or prior to the end of any statutory period in which valid patent protection can be obtained in the United States. It must provide the government with non-exclusive license. If the institution elects to retain title, the institution must provide the government, through a confirmatory license, a non-exclusive, non-transferable, irrevocable, paid-up right to practice or have practiced in the invention on behalf of the United States throughout the world. The institutions must share with the inventors a portion of any revenue received from licensing the inventor. Any remaining revenue after expenses must be used to support scientific research or education. Universities have varied practices to share such remaining revenues. Sometimes it is all retained in central administration. Sometimes it is shared with the relevant academic department. Intellectual property, types of patents, utility patents, new machines, new processes, manufacturers, compositions of matter, or improvements. There are also design patents and plant patents. Utility patents are machines or products of manufacture, such as a calculator, solar collector, electric circuit, automobile tire, prosthesis or screwdriver, processes, either manufacturing or chemical, such as a method and system for orthodontic moving of teeth, a process for preparing isocyanates, a method of purifying a chemical compound, and compounds or compositions, usually chemical, such as an alloy of metals, a drug, or a plating bath. A design patent protects any new or original and ornamental design and is directed to the appearance of an article or manufacture. A plant patent can be obtained on a new variety of asexually reproductive plants. Well, what is not patentable? Substitution of one material for another, change in size or shape, making something portable, reversal of parts. The key words to patents are novel and useful. Numerous negative rules of patentability can be asserted. They are useful in specific cases. Generally, it is not patentable invention to substitute one material for another, like plastic or wood. Generally, a mere change in size does not constitute a patentable invention. Generally, it does not constitute a patentable invention merely to make something portable. A mere reversal of parts does not usually produce a patentable invention. The substitution of an equivalent element for another element is not ordinarily a patentable invention, and a mere change of shape does not bring about patentability ordinarily. What is a copyright? A copyright protects certain original works against copying. Literary works, musical and dramatic works, including software, pantomime and choreographic works, pictorial, graphic, and sculptural works, motion pictures, other audiovisual works, and sound recordings. These are governed by Section 106 of the 1976 Copyright Act. These categories should be viewed broadly. For example, computer programs and most compilations may be registered as literary works. Maps and architectural plans may be registered as pictorial, graphic, and sculptural works. A copyright covers the author's life plus 70 years, and it allows for rewards for the author. And what cannot be copyrighted? Several categories of material are generally not eligible for federal copyright protection. These include, among others, works that have not been fixed in a tangible form of expression. For example, choreographic works that have not been notated or recorded, or improvisational speeches or performances that have not been written or recorded. Titles, names, short phrases and slogans, familiar symbols or designs, mere variations of typographic ornamentation, lettering or coloring, mere listings of ingredients or contents, ideas, procedures, methods, systems, processes, concepts, principles, discoveries, or devices, as distinguished from a description, explanation, or illustration. Yeah, so you can't copyright an idea. Works consisting entirely of information that is common property and containing no original authorship. For example, standard calendars, height and weight charts, tape measures and rulers, and lists or tables taken from public documents or other common sources cannot be copyrighted. Copyrights for grants and contracts is governed by Section 106 of the 1976 Copyright Act. Unless publication is prohibited, the recipient is free to arrange copyright of the publication. Another reason to avoid publication restriction clauses in grants and contracts. The government must have a royalty-free license to use and authorize others to use it for government purposes. Royalties from copyrights, like inventions, may represent grant-related income. Such income usually is managed in a manner similar to PHS policy. For example, deduction alternative, cost sharing or matching alternative, or additional cost alternative. Grantees should adopt policies that will encourage the creative energy of researchers, portion royalties to the institution if there's been an investment of facilities, funds, or time by the employer, and serve the public interest. Institutional policies will dictate royalty and grant-related income matters. Human resource management. Human resource management is governed by a lot of different regulations. OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the department of the U.S. government with the responsibility to ensure safety and healthful work environments. EEO, the Equal Opportunity Act, covers Title 7 of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits employment discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The Equal Pay Act of 1963, EPA, which protects men and women who perform substantially equal work in the same establishment from sex-based wage discrimination. The Age Discrimination in Employment Act of 1967, ADEA, which protects individuals who are 40 years of age or older. Title I and Title V of the American Disabilities Act of 1990, ADA, which prohibit employment discrimination against qualified individuals with disabilities in the private sector and in state and local governments. Sections 501 and 505 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, which prohibit discrimination against qualified individuals with disabilities who work in the federal government, and the Civil Rights Act of 1991, which, among other things, provides monetary damages in case of intentional employment discrimination. The Americans with Disabilities Act gives civil rights protections to individuals with disabilities similar to those provided to individuals on the basis of race, color, sex, national origin, age, and religion. It guarantees equal opportunity for individuals with disabilities in public accommodations, employment, transportation, state and local government services, and telecommunications. The Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, establishes minimum wage, overtime pay, record keeping, and child labor standards affecting full-time and part-time employees. Now, how do you determine whether or not a person is a consultant or an employee? First you have to determine whether it's a consultant or things. Does the institution provide instruction about where and how to work? Are you providing a workstation, materials, tools, supplies, and are you paying a set salary then for piecework? And are you in a continued relationship? Are you controlling the method or result of work? Are you providing training? Are other employees assisting the person? Are they integrating into your staff? Are you setting their work hours? Is their work part of your customary line of business? Are you their primary only client? Do they assume no financial risk or have personal investment in their business? Do they make no attempt to get other clients? If a lot of these answers are yes, then that person is most likely an employee. In unusual situations, a person may be both a consultant and an employee. Institutions must have guidelines that are consistently applied regardless of the amount of support. There are, of course, legal ramifications for misclassification. $2,500 a day from the federal government, retroactive taxes, possible lawsuits from the employee. There's withholding tax issues. The IRS first assumes the person is an employee and the organization has to prove otherwise. In unusual circumstances, a person may be both a consultant and an employee, but there must be written guidelines indicating the conditions which consulting fees to an employee is proper. So there's federal fines, retroactive taxes, possible lawsuits, and withholding tax issues. Grants Requirements Framework. There are three types of requirements when you write a grant: statutory requirements, program requirements, and administrative requirements. We'll start with statutes and regulatory requirements. Those are legislative and regulatory process, lobbying, and mandated requirements. So what we are trying to do: increase knowledge of and sensitivity to issues surrounding the responsible conduct of research and research misconduct. Approve the ability of participants to make legal and ethical choices in the face of conflicts involving scientific research. Develop an appreciation for accepted normative scientific practices for conducting research. Misconduct in science means fabrication, falsification, plagiarism, or other practices that seriously deviate from those that are commonly accepted. That was all from page 52 and didn't make much sense. So let's go on to the federal budget process. Formulation, congressional action, and execution. For the federal budget formulation, this begins the federal budget process, establishes budget guidelines, and it's usually proposed each spring. The president's budget begins the process of formulating the budget by establishing general budget and fiscal policy guidelines, usually by the spring of each year. Congressional action, codified in the Congressional Budget Act of 1974. Congress considers the president's budget proposals and will act on them in three ways: either approve them, modify them, or disapprove them. Congress can do several other things: change funding levels, eliminate programs, or add programs not requested by the president. Congress does not enact a budget as such. Congress adopts a budget resolution that provides a framework within each congressional committee to prepare authorization and appropriation bills that provide spending authority to government agencies. Spending authority is the execution of the budget. Traditionally, Congress provides spending budget authority each year for 13 regular appropriations and for other specific purposes. Congress usually enacts legislation prior to making appropriations that authorizes an agency to carry out particular programs and can limit the amount that can be appropriated. Authorizing legislation can specify expiration times, for example, 1 year, like the National Science Foundation, specified number of years, some won't expire. Congress may enact appropriations for a program even though there is no special authorization for it. Appropriation bills, that was authorization bills. Appropriation bills are initiated in the House. The House forwards the bill to the Senate. If there's disagreement on particular matters, the bill goes to a conference committee. The bill goes to both houses for approval and Congress sends it to the President for approval or veto. Continuing resolutions, if Congress does not complete work by the beginning of the fiscal year, it enacts a joint resolution called a continuing resolution. The continuing resolution is like an appropriations bill and provides authority to agencies to continue operations at some specified level up to a specific date or until a regular appropriations bill is enacted. A continuing resolution can cover a portion or the entire government. If the President does not accept the continuing resolution, government agencies are required to shut down, with exception for some activities, until Congress passes a continuing resolution that the President will accept. Budget execution is an anti-deficiency act. The government agencies may not spend more than the Congress has appropriated, and they may use funds only for purposes specified by law. The Anti-Deficiency Act prohibits them from spending or obligating the government to spend in advance of an appropriations unless specific authority to do so is provided in law. Supplemental appropriations, during the execution phase, the government often finds that it needs to spend more money than Congress appropriated for the fiscal year because of circumstances that were not anticipated when the budget was formulated and appropriations enacted for that fiscal year. Then the Congress can enact a supplemental appropriation. The Impoundment Control Act of 1974 said that changing circumstances may reduce the need for certain spending for which Congress has appropriated funds. Under the requirements of the Impoundment Act of 1974, the President cannot simply decline to spend appropriations. The President may propose deferrals, all temporary, or rescissions, all permanent. Deferrals can be ordered by the President unless overturned by an act of Congress. The President cannot defer funds for policy reasons. Deferrals must be for reasons of changing requirements, operating efficiency, or specifically provided by law. Rescissions permanently cancel budget authority and take effect only if Congress passes a law approving them. The President can propose a rescission for any reason. Mandated requirements impact on research administrators by way of statute, legislative acts, for example, Public Health Service Act, Section 493, regulations, for example, 42 CFR Part B, Subpart A, and policy. Policy is communicated in several formats: public policy, like affirmative action, debarment, research policy, human subjects, recombinant DNA, and disclosure policy, patents, copyrights, Freedom of Information Act. Principal sources of policies include public laws, executive orders, and OMB circulars. Mandated requirements, statutes, regulations, and policies, legislative and regulatory process, and government relations. Regulatory process, implementation of statutes are usually by way of regulations. Regulations are issued by specific administrative agencies in the executive branch. Administrative Procedures Act requires agencies to go through a notice of rulemaking and comment process for regulations. Code of Federal Regulations, the CFRs, is a codification of the general and permanent rules published in the Federal Register by executive departments and agencies of the federal government. The code is divided into 50 titles. The Code of Federal Regulations is kept up by the individual issues of the Federal Register. Rules are presented in three formats: proposed, interim, and final. Public comment on proposed rules is solicited by publishing proposed rules in the Federal Register. It can and does affect the eventual content of regulations. So the Code of Federal Regulations is divided into 50 titles. And it was all the general rules were first published in the Federal Register. Rules can be proposed, temporary, interim, and final. And there's always an opportunity for public comment. Mandated requirements. The Federal Acquisition Regulations, the FAR, deals with contracts and agency supplements. Other mandated requirements are in the OMB circulars that cover cost principles, administrative standards, and audit standards. The FARS, Federal Acquisition Contract Regulations, is a system of uniform policies and procedures governing acquisition or contracting actions of all executive agencies. It's established the Office of Federal Procurement Policy in OMB. The FAR is Chapter 1 of Title 48 of the Code of Federal Regulations, CFRs. And the FAR has got a bunch of chunks in it. The first part is guidelines of use of clauses. The second part is contract clauses. The third part is government forms for use in acquisition actions. And the last part are agency-specific supplements. The FARs also define the content of procurement agreements, contracts. Agencies may add their own supplement to the FAR. The procurement process begins by the government identifying a need, exactly specifying to contractors what it wants to buy, and inviting bids. The bidders are invited by either a request for proposals, an RFP, or a broad agency announcement, a BAA. RFPs are used when goods and services can clearly be defined. BAAs are often used in the arena of research when the procurement can only be defined in general form. Bidders are invited to define more precisely the what and the how of the research being procured. The contracting officer is the principal agent of the government in procuring goods and services. Compliance. Regulatory compliance, insurance, risk management, human subjects, animal care, biohazards, and security. So we've kind of gone over those. General compliance, health and safety, invention statements, misconduct in science, conflict of interest, debarment suspension, and recombinant DNA. Should all be ringing bells by now. The Solomon Amendment allows federal funding for an educational institution to be cut if that institution has a policy or practice that prohibits military recruiting on campus or prohibits access to student directory information for the same purpose, it's kind of creepy, or maintains an anti-ROTC policy. Small Business Act imposes requirements on subcontracting when involved in a prime contract with the federal government. Requirements apply to utilization of women-owned small businesses, small business concerns, and small business concerns owned and controlled and economically disadvantaged individuals. Davis-Bacon Act concerns wage rates to laborers and mechanics. Waivers are possible from NIH, but not from the Department of Commerce. Contract Work Hours and Safety Standards Act requires payment of minimum and overtime to laborers and mechanics on government contracts. Employers are required to notify employees of hazards in the workplace. The Walsh-Healy Public Contracts Act, imposition of fair social employment standards on government contractors. The Copeland Anti-Kickback Act prohibits any payment of gratuity made for the purposes of including award of a subcontract or prime contract with the federal government. Clean Air Act, the Byrd Anti-Lobbying Amendment, debarment and suspensions, rights to inventions, are all compliance issues. Financial assistance awards, the government issues regulations covering grants implemented through OMB circulars and agency regulations. Administrative regulations covering federal assistance, like grants, are embodied in OMB circulars and in agency regulations implementing them, which speak of program goals and awards as opposed to goods and services acquisitions. For example, in the National Institute of Health, compliance requirements are spelled out in the NGA and reference legislation, regulations, special terms and conditions, PHS grants policy statement, Title 45 CFR Part 74, or Title 45 CFR Part 92 as applicable. The PHS grants and policy statements is a term and condition for all NIH assistance awards, which means that the contents of the document are legally binding requirements for all grant recipients. The Title 45 CFRs contain the HHS rules and requirements that govern the administration of grants. The order of precedence is legislation, regulation, term and condition, and agency rules. Earlier we reviewed the budget process and noted how the financial assistance process begins with legislation. We remember that an Authorization Act describes the general nature of the assistance to be given. An Appropriations Act makes the funding available. Then we solicit proposals. Federal assistance is obtained through unsolicited proposals and solicited proposals. The most common method by which applications are solicited are by way of program announcements, PAs, or requests for applications, RFA, RFA. PAs stay open for long periods of time and represent long-term programmatic goals. RFAs generally are one-shot or short-term opportunities and carry set aside funding support. The grants officer is the principal agent of the government in this process, and he issues a notice of grant award, NGA, to the successful applicant. NGAs specify the total cost of the project budget and the general and special terms of conditions of the award. Most agencies have developed a handbook which specifies all their grant regulations. If it's an unsolicited proposal, it's called an R01. Then there are reporting requirements. The Financial Status Report, FSR, is a report of expenditures documenting the financial status of the award. It's submitted by way of SF-272-270-269, the long form, or 269A, the short form. When there's no program income, you can use a short form. The FSR for each budget period must be submitted within 90 days after the close of the project period, unless the grant was awarded under a SNAP. The SNAP is a streamlined non-competing application process, except for the final segment of the grant in the fifth year. No budget is required, and there are three questions asked in the SNAP for the fifth year, I guess. Are there any changes in the effort of personnel? Are there any changes in other support of any key personnel? Will there be a significant 25% or more unobligated balance? Progress report, most federal assistance awards require at a minimum an annual progress report. This can also be requested as frequently as a quarter. Final reports are due 90 days after the close of the project. Required under Title 37 CFR Part 401, if there is an invention, it must be included in a final invention statement. Certification, which is required within 90 days following the expiration or termination of the project. So financial status report, progress report, inventions report, equipment report, and property report. Fiscal reports. The SF-272 is a report of federal cash transactions. The SF-270 is a request for advance or reimbursement. The SF-269 can be quarterly, semi-annual, annual, or at the end of a project. Okay. The SAF-269 Financial Status Report reports total awarded, total spent. Reports cost sharing required. It may be waived, but this is rare, when the SF-270 or 272s are determined to be adequate. External invoices, another way of collecting money. Procurement issues, making purchases with grant funds. Well, there's rules. These are governed by A110 and A121 or A122. A110 is 2 CFR 115. A122 is 2 CFR 220. There's three mechanisms for procurement: purchase orders, subcontracts, and consulting contracts. The subcontracts creates a legal, subcontracts create a legal relationship between the prime and the subcontractor, and this relationship is reflected in pass-through flow-down requirements. Mandatory assistance, such as formula grants, where mandatory assistance is provided by the federal government to states and municipalities to conduct research, other sponsored program activities, and or health and human services. For the most part, grants from states are made to educational or other nonprofit institutions. The funds are provided to the state by the federal government. The state solicits applications and then awards the funds on a competitive basis. It should be noted that the states, in awarding the pass-through funds, might also add their own administrative requirements in addition to those provided by the federal government. Subcontracts have some critical clauses in them. The first is a well-defined scope of work. The second is terms of payment. The third, copyright, data right, patent rights, how those would be distributed. Indemnity is a hold harmless clause. Termination defines the terms for cause versus at will, limitation of funds, special sponsor restrictions. You cannot hold subcontracts to more restrictive requirements than the general ones. Sole source provider. Then subcontracts must contain the following flow down provisions by reference: the prime award, EEO, Copeland Anti-Kickback, Davis-Bacon, Contract Work and Hours and Safety Standards Act, Rights to Inventions, Clean Air and Water Pollution Act, Byrd Anti-Lobbying Amendment, and Debarment and Suspension. And post-award management. Post-award deals with issues like budget revisions, F&A negotiation and recovery, sponsor restrictions and approvals, fiscal and effort reporting, service centers, program income, internal controls, and expanded authorities. Generally, post-award is concerned with misuse of funds, unallowable costs, allocation of costs, accelerated expenditures, unobligated balances, cost transfers, reporting, and payment. Expanded authorities allows for pre-award costs up to 90 days before the start of the award, for no-cost extension, budget revisions. National Institute has a 25% limit on the bottom line of total award. Other agencies like NSF have different thresholds, and movement from indirect costs. Equipment approval only if one piece of equipment is $25,000 or more. Two pieces of equipment at $20,000 each do not need approval. Expanded authorities does not include change in scope, change in hiring personnel, reduction of the PI effort, or additional money. Electronic Research Administration, ERA, for Grants Administration. Electronic Research Administration is very much a part of the research administrator's life. In addition to the fact that most information retrieval is now conducted through the internet, several key systems are in place. Grants.gov, list funding opportunities, submission portals, NSF Fastlane, reports, budget changes, expanded authorities, NIH Commons, reports, just-in-time awards, expanded authorities, iEdison, intellectual property reporting. Grants.gov provides a unified site for interaction between grant applicants and the U.S. federal agencies that manage grant funds, 26 agencies. Public Law 106-107 is a statute that underlies the agency's efforts to streamline and simplify the Grants and Cooperative Agreements administrative process. Grants.gov developed out of the Federal Financial Assistance Management Improvement Act of 1999, also known as Public Law 106-107, enacted November of 99. Purpose of the Act, to improve the effectiveness and performance of federal financial assistance programs, simplify federal financial assistance application and reporting requirements, and improve the delivery of services to the public and facilitate greater coordination upon those responsible for delivering services. All 26 funding agencies must transition to grants.gov for both grant opportunity postings and electronic proposal submissions. As of February 2006, 20 of 26 federal grant-making agencies had posted over 500 electronic grant applications to grants.gov, and 100% of federal grant opportunities offered by all 26 federal grant-making agencies were currently posted to grants.gov. Grants.gov is under the oversight of the Department of Commerce. The NIH is the lead agency in setting it up. There are several important Office of Management and Budget circulars, the OMB circulars. These circulars set common policy from which federal agencies promulgate their regulations and rules. OMB circulars are binding upon federal agencies who implement them. OMB does not issue regulations. There are three principal categories into which circulars can be grouped: cost principles, audit, and administrative standards. There are also several PHF CFRs that should be noted with the cost principles and audit categories, hospitals and for-profit organizations. APA, the Administrative Procedures Act, is followed by OMB. As of January 2006, the OMB circulars were changing over to two CFR, and these changes would be listed in the Federal Register. Administrative standards for grants, OMB A110, is for institutions of higher education, hospitals, and other nonprofits. A102 is for state and local governments, and the standards should be sufficient for contract purposes. A110, uniform administration requirements for grants and other agreements with institutions of higher education, hospitals, and other nonprofit organizations. A102, administrative requirements for state and local governments. Institutional practices that meet background grants administrative standards, procurement, financial management, etc., are adequate for federal contract administration unless a specific contract requires special processes. A110, the administrative standards one, governs pre-award policies and forms, standards for financial management, property and procurement standards, records and reports, closeouts and follow-ups, and general administrative requirements. OMB circulars cost principles apply to grants and contracts. A21 is cost principle circulars apply to all federally funded activities. Minor exceptions, published tuition rates for catalog courses. A21, cost principles for educational institutions. A122 is for nonprofits. A87 is for state, local, and Indian tribe governments. 45 CFR Part 74 Appendix E is for hospitals. And FAR 48 Subpart 31.2 for for-profit organizations. Cost principles under A21 must be reasonable, allocable, and consistent. Basic considerations are composition of total costs, factors affecting allowability of costs, reasonable costs, allocable costs, and consistently applied costs. This is just going back over some of the legislation. Federal laws prohibiting job discrimination. Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits employment discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Equal Pay Act 1963 protects men and women who perform substantially equal work in the same establishment from sex-based wage discrimination. Age Discrimination in Employment, 1967. Americans with Disabilities Act, 1990. Rehabilitation Act, 1973. Civil Rights Act of 1991, providing monetary damages in case of intentional employment discrimination. What discriminatory practices are prohibited by these laws? Under Title VII, the ADA and the ADEA, it is illegal to discriminate in any aspect of employment, including hiring, firing, compensation, classification of employees, transfer, promotion, layoff or recall, job advertising, recruitment, testing, use of company facilities, training and apprentice programs, fringe benefits, pay and retirement. Discriminatory practices under these laws also include harassment, retaliation, employment decisions based on stereotypes or assumptions. Americans with Disabilities Act requires reasonable accommodation, like make existing facilities used by employees readily accessible to and usable by persons with disabilities, job restructuring, modifying work schedules, reassignment to a vacant position, acquiring or modifying equipment or devices, adjusting, modifying exams, training materials. An employer is required to make an accommodation to the known disability of a qualified applicant or employee if it would not impose an undue hardship on the operation of the employer's business. Undue hardship is defined as an action requiring significant difficulty or expense when considered in light of factors such as an employer's size, financial resource, and the nature and structure of the operation. An employer is not required to lower quality or production standards to make an accommodation, nor is an employer obligated to provide personal use items such as glasses or hearing aids. Anti-Kickback 1986 prohibits any payment or gratuity made for the purpose of inducing award of a subcontract or prime contract with the federal government. Circular A110, all contracts awarded by a recipient, including small purchases, shall contain the following provisions: equal opportunity, Copeland Anti-Kickback, Davis-Bacon, Contract Work Hours and Safety Standards Act, rights to inventions made under a contract or agreement, Clean Air Act, Byrd Anti-Lobbying Amendment, debarment and suspension. We'll go back over those next time.